Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And joining us in a studio this morning is Bafana Modise. He is the spokesperson for the South African Friends of Israel. Bafana, I think it's the first time I've actually spoken to you in studio. Is that right?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. We've been speaking for a lot for over years, but today's the first time I'm in studio. Yeah.
So we were just chatting about this weather, and Bafana was telling me a story that I'm sorry, I can't get over it. Please just repeat the story.
No. So last night, as I was walking out of my house, there is a small snake just on my doorstep. And I'm like, flip, is this a real snake? So I picked up a stick, started pushing it up, and started, you know, making moves. I'm like, flip, it is a snake. So yeah. I had to go run to the nearest brig nearby. But now my biggest worry is, where's the mother? Because that's my biggest worry. But yeah, this rain is starting to unleash
and
some things.
And just in case you thought, obviously Bafana lives, you know, on a bordering the Kruger. He doesn't. He lives around the corner in the neighborhood.
Yeah, Hazel. We do have snakes here. Who would have thought?
Look, I know there's snakes here. I just didn't know that they were the creepy crawly kind. So I don't know. Did you retain your masculinity during this?
Yeah, time? I was like, I can't scream at this point, right? I'm not going to scream. I'm a man.
So right, exactly.
Just to attack and yeah. But now my biggest worry is that,
The mom.
Where's mommy?
Yeah.
But hopefully, I don't know. This is one of those. Let's hope so.
Right, exactly. Well, that's a very scary story. Equally as scary is the misinformation, disinformation that is happening in South Africa, well, indeed around the world, in terms of Israel, in terms of Hamas, Hezbollah, and it's been quite deliberate. Well, we know that SAFI, which is the South African Friends of Israel, has been involved in trying to get out the right information, accurate information, even before the war. Just tell us a little bit about how you've managed this since the 7th of October.
I think for most people, when October 7th happened, most Christians really believed that Israel was on the brink of destruction, right? And when we retaliated, when Israel retaliated, the narrative changed. So before then, people were sympathizing with Israel. How could Hamas do this? What kind of sick people are
these? Very small window there.
Very small window. And then when Israel started retaliating back, then the victim cults started being thrown around. They are oppressed and all of that. So we had to come in at that time to balance the narrative that Hamas attacked, genocide is what Hamas has been standing for many years, not Israel. And now there's been this twist of narrative. And we started doing events around the townships. We started engaging with leaders in communities, started making, now recently we had a VR experience where we are exposing leaders in South Africa to the truth, where they can see for themselves what happened on October 7th. Because usually I think October 7th is just seen as this date when the war started. But people don't really understand the trauma, the pain, the atrocities that were done on that day. And until you have seen it with your own eyes or have been to Israel and seen those burnt buildings and have heard the lived experience of people, that's when, as a human being, you start to clicks in you that it's not just a date that describes the beginning of a war, but it's actually people's life.
And the other thing is that I noticed when I went to Israel for the first time after October 7th was we almost think of it as one attack. And only when you go to the area and you go from kibbutz to center to Nova, you realize the extent of it. It wasn't one attack. It was an invasion.
Definitely.
And to understand that is critical.
We went with Shembe last year. He's one of the major leaders in South Africa with over millions of followers. And when he was there, he was surprised on how many sites we were taking him to. Like, okay, we are studying here.
Exactly.
We're studying here. Like, Kantlento, where's Agalini? And we started then educating and trying to explain to him what really happened. So I think the more trips we take to Israel, which we hope through your donations, that we can take a lot of leaders to Israel so they can see for themselves and get to hear from lived experiences. But then in South Africa, what we have been doing, it's events, it's advocacy events in Soweto, in Katlehong, Across the country, we even went as far as Lesotho. We have Friends of Israel Lesotho now, just recently launched. We have a youth in Zion in Lesotho as well. So you are breaking even beyond the border. The next stop is Botswana, is Swaziland, SADC as a whole. But one thing that is certain is that South Africans on the ground, I can assure you, they are not voting for the ANC based on the Palestine issue.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, they didn't even vote for the ANC in this latest election. So it shows that this narrative, this anti-Israel, anti-Jewish sentiment only comes from the herds, but not necessarily the people on the ground. And I think we need to balance that when we engage, because even now with the issue of Rasool being kicked out of America, people believe that America kicked out South Africa. Meanwhile, he kicked out Rasool, who literally used the South African flag for his own agenda in Washington. So we need to draw that distinction very soon so that people don't end up hijacking a war that is not their fight, that is not theirs. I believe that America right now is fighting back on ANC. For how many years ANC has been pushing this anti-America, anti-West narrative?
Well, how can you blame America for that? You know, the ANC have really insulted them for year after year after year, treated them poorly, but still expect money, still expect the aid.
Yes.
And we're quite offended now that that America are pushing back.
No, definitely. You look at the narrative that has been pushed that we won't be bullied. We want to claim sovereignty when it suits us. But when we were busy with Russia, when we were busy with China, no one spoke about sovereignty. Now it's a movement or a narrative that has been built up. Cyril Ramaphosa said, keep your America and I will keep my South Africa. And then when a US aid goes, he's like, no, we have to play victim. You can't be playing. You started the battle. Unnecessarily, very reckless to say that. One man who said this was Mugabe, and we all know what happened to Zimbabwe afterwards. So I think we really need to start working, finding ways on how do we also go back to stabilizing DECO. DECO is no longer DECO that we know of diplomacy. It has become functional, and it has become an office where one cannot actually expect diplomacy from them. When you're on Russia, they said we're non-aligned. When it's American Palestine, even taking them to court, they just jumped to Zimbabwe, they jumped Sudan, they jumped Mozambique, and even to this day, people of Sudan are still dying. And there's no much emphasis that has been made on these continental issues. Look at Congo, what happened in Congo. So DECO cannot claim moral superiority on international stage while they are failing next door.
How do we hold DECO accountable? You know, our press isn't doing it because they should be asking these questions.
Yeah.
They should be raising it and saying, hold on, what is going on here? Has DECO been hijacked? Has it been unduly influenced by a certain segment or ideology?
Yeah.
But we don't seem to have the media in South Africa, aside from voices like yours, like my own, Lachai FM, where we raise these concerns. Why do you think that is?
I think one thing that the current government has done very well was to build a narrative that anything that is anti-American is revolutionary, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
Anything that if you speak for American interest or you speak for Israeli interest, you are a sellout, you are whatever. Mm. If you're speaking for Russian and China, you're a revolutionary.
Yeah.
Cuba, you're a revolutionary. So that has become the tone even in our messaging in the country. So unless there's a tribe that will rise, that will start to hold these guys accountable, will start to question, like the likes of Bafanas who are questioning every certain movement. But right now, as long as DECO is under the ruling party, they will always try to push their own party policy. And we thought that with the GNU, we might see a balanced approach to issues. But we saw when Ramaphosa went to Russia and said, we are friends with Russia, and Steenhuisen said, no, not in our name. So you can tell that even with the GNU, hopefully things can turn around. But the ANC has not accepted that they are 40% party, and they still have that view or attitude of running GNU.
It seems to be even more because they're pushing NHI, they're pushing through all of the laws and changes that they have been talking about. Now is when they're doing it. So they haven't really understood that at all.
No, definitely. I think the 40% mark on the, it doesn't matter to them as long as they have comrades next to them, Al Jamaa, all these other small parties that actually echoes their views and ideology, then DA and others are just guys who unimportant. And we saw with the budget recently what it has done. South Africans are about to go on a 15.5% VAT increase. That will increase the cost of living in this country. How do you fix unemployment, poverty by increasing the cost of living? The economics in Lithuli House are very confusing.
Yeah, well.
But other than that, we hope that as time goes by, we will see, like yesterday, Hungary withdrew their support for the ICJ case. And hopefully South Africa will fold and withdraw this. This case has nothing to do with our people. And we are about to suffer because of, where is Russia? Why is it silent? America is beating on us. And you don't hear Russia or China coming to our defense.
That's a good point. I never thought of that.
And now we are at the point where we might find ourselves in a very squeaky situation, and I don't trust that these guys have our best interest at heart. So South Africa has one option: withdraw the case from the ICJ. It's not our battle. It's not our war. We have bigger issues internally, domestically here.
When you're on the ground, when you are talking to communities, let's say in Soweto and around the country, Christian communities, what is the response? What is the feeling around these issues?
When you speak to Christians on the ground, one don't even know there's a case being taken to the ICJ.
Really?
Like, to them, it's more of Israel is the Holy Land. Those who bless Israel will be blessed, and they will be cursed, right? And then when you go to the political elites, they will tell you, we sympathize with the people of Palestine, and we still continue with the two-state solution. However, I don't think this case is necessary. I don't think that we should be bearing the brunt and the fury of Trump over issues that had nothing to do with us. Rasul was kicked out of Washington, not because of Soweto's issues, 100%. Not because of water, not because of unemployment in South Africa. He was kicked out for his Palestine views and his anti-Trump views. So it kind of shows that South Africans are slowly trying to claim back, to say we need to be more South African, pro-South African, before anything else. But we have, what you have seen with Deco has become pro-Russia, pro-China, and less about South Africa. And at this current stage, we need leaders who can prioritize our people and the future of this country.
Well, we saw that. We saw with the past mayor of Johannesburg, the first public appearance, he's wearing a Palestinian scarf.
Yeah.
Wear a South African scarf. We saw that the final rally of the ANC before the election looked like it was a Palestinian rally. It did not look like a South African one or an ANC one. So it's deeply problematic because we have definitely switched to prioritize a conflict many thousands of kilometers away instead of our own South African needs.
Sadly, even that did not work for them. They still could not garner the vote that they wanted. So maybe to them, they may be feeling like they were used because even Malema, on the day of election, he was wearing a Palestinian scarf. But both parties lost dismally in the election. So I think it's time we wake up that our issues here in South Africa are more important, and the issue in Palestine and Israel can only be resolved by a Mandela-like person who is willing to engage and bring peace forward. And there are many other role players in the Middle East. Why are they not championing this issue in the Middle East than to be given to a country that can't even keep its lights on? Doesn't make sense.
What is the deal with the EFF? Because that don't make sense to me. To me, it feels like posturing. It feels like it's just trying to capture what's popular, even though, or what they think are popular. Do they mean half of the rubbish that they say?
The question is, when you say EFF, you mean Julius.
Yes, I do. To be fair.
One would assume when it started that it was bringing within the black political space, the ANC was losing that ground, and you are not hearing a voice of young people intentional towards fixing immediate problems that our people face. And EFF was seen as that presser to kind of expedite.
Real revolution, not old-fashioned revolution.
My point exactly. But then, however, they lost the mark when they started the flip-flopping on certain issues. When Julius is pro this one morning, then tomorrow is pro this. But the whole inception of most people why they voted for the EFF for the first time was that we have a better and younger ANC that can expedite the issues of black majority in this country.
Right.
But however, as we have seen of late, the black masses now, they've rejected revolutionary and ideological politics, and they are looking for a common struggle, which is a struggle of jobs, a struggle of a functioning economy, a struggle of social cohesion. And I think that's what most people want. And that's why you saw a lot of new parties like your Bosa, your Rise Mzansi, your Action SA are taking it into those votes, because we have a different kind of electorate now that is more younger, that is more modernized, that is not necessarily affiliated to radical ideological politics, but they are looking for solution-based politics, action-based politics. That's what you're looking for.
So, which is so interesting, because Julius is normally quite good at reading the room.
Yeah.
But he's not doing it in this case. If he had to flip and move in that direction and talk about accountability, delivery, economics, and aim it at the youth, he could have a massive party.
But Howard, that wouldn't work, because Julius thrives on the anger of black people. Mm. So you need to get people angry. You need to get people feel that it's us against them.
Race-based politics.
My point exactly. So once you have that, like I've always said this, to say you have AfriForum and you have EFF, right? These are the far right.
Exactly.
So once you mobilize on the issue of race and for your own people and historical injustices and all of that, you invoke certain pains and certain things that in natural, it's like someone who's mobilizing on religion.
Yes.
It's very easy, but issue-based politics is the new future, which are more common than before. Today, even Santin doesn't have water. Potholes are found anywhere in this country. So there's no more black issues and white issues anymore. Our issues are more common.
Well, the number one issue, we know this, is no matter what anybody wants to tell us, the number one issue in South Africa is, are people finding jobs? Are making sure that people can live a life, further themselves, feed a family, and thrive. That's what people care about. They're not, they are less worried about the ideological issue between Israel and Palestine.
No, definitely. I think for most Christians in this country, if you had to do a referendum and say, should we close the embassy of Israel in South Africa, they'll tell you, no, why should we close it? Because to them, is they don't see it as an issue that is nearer to them. Mm. However, the Iranian principals have managed to infiltrate the organization of Mandela and Tambo. And they are literally, I mean, now there's a report that the ANC might have had prior knowledge to October 7th attacks. It's just it's a rumor, it's not yet founded. But that also questions, why did Naledi Pandor call Hamas immediately after the attack? And at the same time, we took them less than 6 months to prepare a case to the ICJ, and Hamas was running numbers every single week to give them a case. So also, if you are trying to connect the dots here, you may find that there is some merit into it, but obviously it's a rumor, it's not necessarily proven. But then you realize there that this issue of Palestine is an Iranian project that has been transported through a history of South Africa of apartheid. But most of us, we know the truth. Our history of apartheid did not have suicide bombers. Our history did not have hostages.
Well, I put this to the leader of Al Jamaa, and he said, well, you know, the world said that Nelson Mandela was a terrorist. And I said, well, does that mean that because, you know, if I call you a thief and you're not a thief, does that mean no one else is ever going to be a thief? You know, it's the most illogical thing in the world. Like, what nonsense is that? Yes, so he might have been called a terrorist and he wasn't a terrorist. Great.
Sure. But
it doesn't mean there's no terrorists ever.
But Mandela was called a terrorist, but you guys are doing the actual terrorism.
Exactly, that's the point.
So to Mandela, it was more of a naming. To you guys, it's a description. So for them, there's always this narrative that freedom fighters are terrorists of today, are tomorrow's heroes.
Yes.
But the truth of the matter is that once you start having hostages, once you start having suicide bombers, once you start having those tactics of war, this is terrorism. It cannot be Clint or whatever, cooked up for some other reason. We have, as South Africans, we have to stand up against this narrative and start to work towards how do we rebuild our relations and make DECO diplomatic again and not factional.
So I've got a whole bunch of messages to read, but before we do that, before we conclude, yeah. What's your message to, because we've got a full range, Jewish listeners, Christian listeners, everybody, broad range. What is your message as Safi, as Bafana Modise? What is your message to South Africans?
I think South Africans, we are at the tipping point. I think what Trump has done to South Africa is to say, choose your friends, but most importantly, choose yourselves. What future do you want for your nation? Choose your battles wisely. And at the current state, we have been led by people who are ideologically pursued and not pursued by the interest of our people. It's about time that our leaders in parliament and different political parties, they start to put their weight in. The ANC is a 40% party, and I believe those parties were voted on the idea that they were different from other political parties, or from ANC and the EFF. May we see them rising up and speaking up the truth and defending what is left of South Africa. I'm not quite hopeful that in the next 20 years, South Africa will be still standing with the current attitude that we have. And even with the current decor that we have, we might be isolated in the world. Mm. We need to find a way where we've put South Africa first. And internationally, we play a diplomatic game. That's what is needed. Diplomacy dictates that you first prioritize your nation and your people. And on a global stage, you align based on mutual interest. But what you are seeing today, China, Russia, Cuba, all these are ideological and revolutionary partners from the past. But beyond liberation, what have they done for Africa? All African nations will tell you about how Russia and Cuba liberated them. But beyond the liberation, what did they do for them? And I think that's the discussion that we must hold frankly as South Africans to say post-liberation, post-apartheid, what is the future that I want my child or your child to have in the next 10 years?
Dina says, I'm loving this interview. Bafana is a legend. Mark says, good morning, be strong, be courageous. And Ronnie says, thank you for the phenomenal work that you do. On an aside note, Bafana could read the telephone directory and have women riveted. Lots and lots of messages. Bafana Modise, thank you. As always, thank you for the incredible work that you do. Awesome to chat to you. 8:58.